Hello, everyone. I am Glenn Moyes.
I am Adam Weber.
And we are so busy right now.
Well, yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. If you guys read our last blog post about the Animation Academy going online, you'll understand why.
I have no life right now.
Yeah. So we're all super busy getting that launched. But the good news is that even though we are still, you know, really busy with that, every once in a while we do actually do some discussion on the story of Hackberry Hollow. Now that we've had some time to just kind of, you know, depart from it and then look back on the story with fresh eyes and thinking about some awesome things that we could do. In fact, there's actually something so awesome that we're doing with the ending, and if we can get to work, it's going to be like...
Careful, Glenn, you're going to have to bleep stuff out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not... That's the only thing we bleep on this podcast is... spoilers. Speaking of spoilers, what we're going to be talking about today is something that we do is just kind of like an exercise in writing is we go watch a movie and then we'll come back and discuss it afterwards.
We analyze the thing. You know, we're such snobs. We pick apart everything we see. But I think that this is a good exercise because when you see a movie or read a book or anything like that, and I just got in the habit of doing this, I'll go through and say, okay, what made it awesome? What did I like about it? Then what did I not like about it? And how would I improve it and fix it and make it awesome? If I was tasked with joining the writing team and saying, hey, fix this story, make it better, make it work for the audience, what would I bring to the table?
Yeah, because it does no good to just be completely critical and point out every single little flaw in a story because, I mean, sure, you could be really good at, you know, with logic and finding out plot holes, but if you cannot do anything with it, also if you cannot...
if you can't fix the plot holes, what good is it pointing them out?
Right. Yeah. You just become, you know, a critic.
Yeah.
Which is funny because people actually make good money doing that.
Maybe I'm in the wrong field.
Yeah. So, but one thing we do make a point of doing when we, you know, discuss these movies is we do want to point out the things that are actually working. Again, it goes back to, you know, let's take these exercises and analyzing other people's work and actually, you know, taking that knowledge and being able to apply it. And so we need to figure out what doesn't work and what does work.
And I think that what does is just as important because you can recognize the things that they did that worked and not, you know, not necessarily incorporating ideas of being derivative. I'm thinking, and we discuss those things too, but generally what mechanics did they use? What did they do to make the story progress? And well, lack of a better term, make it work.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you could have a story that has no plot holes whatsoever and be really boring.
Yeah. You certainly can. And the other thing that I think is a very valid point is sometimes being entertaining can trump not having plot holes, unfortunately. Because plot holes drive me crazy. But
yeah.
a lot of audiences don't care about them as much, and you do need to kind of figure out, okay, where's the balance? Because obviously, if you make it 100% realistic, you're not going to have much of a story in some cases.
Yeah. Yeah, because, well, like, my kind of philosophy behind speculative fiction is I'll give a story one hall pass. I'll give it one what-if scenario, like, what if there is magic? Or what if you could be digitized into a computer and, you know, there's this world inside? You know, that kind of stuff, and that's fine. But if you have
And you're creating this construct within your story or this concept and saying, okay, in this world, this is possible. But then, of course, you don't turn around and bombard the audience with a whole bunch of what-ifs, like mixing, oh, hey, magic exists, and oh, by the way, we have computers that you can digitize and go inside, and oh, by the way, there are space aliens with advanced technology, and oh, by the way, you can move crap with your minds. Pick one!
Yeah, just pick one and run with it. In fact, I think in one of our previous podcasts, Adam, you said that when we're talking about magic systems, what a magic system can't do is more important than
what it can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's set up some rules and then just stick to them and be consistent. So what we're going to be talking about today, our most recent movie that we watched and discussed was Tron Legacy. Now, I'm going to start off and say, if you have not seen the movie, do not listen to the rest of this podcast.
Cut us off.
Yeah, we will spoil the movie for you. We are going to tell you how it ends, okay? We are going to poison your mind with our opinions, and you will not be able to enjoy the movie had you just, you know,
You won't be able to unhear this crap.
Yeah. So, and you just won't enjoy it because we're going to point out some stuff. So if you have not seen the movie, stop listening to it right now. Just put on your hard drive or bookmark the page or whatever. Please do not listen to the rest of this podcast if you have not seen the movie.
And let me point out one other thing about Tron. I really enjoyed it. I loved it as a movie. I thought it worked on many levels, and it was thoroughly entertaining. So if you haven't seen the movie, I think you are in for a treat.
Yeah, we recommend it. We do consider it to be a movie that you should see. Is it a must see? Just I don't know. Go watch it.
I don't know if it's a must see because it does have kind of a niche.
Yeah, but oh, do I fit that niche? I mean, my goodness,
I'm part of that niche.
Yeah, it had Daft Punk in it, so.
Oh yeah, so Glenn's doubly in the niche.
Yeah. Oh, there are so many things about that that was just like I gotta see it. I gotta see it. Yeah, I'm a big nerd. So, okay. So this is your last.
That's what you get when you have a couple of nerds sitting back at their computers typing stories.
So yeah, okay, spoilers incoming, so we'll give you some time to shut
it
off.
Dude, if they haven't shut it off already, they're not going to.
Yeah, shame on you if you haven't. All right, okay.
You've been warned, sinner.
Okay, so one thing I want to discuss, when I saw the movie, I actually saw it in 3D. I've only watched a few 3D movies. I think I've seen, what have I seen in 3D? I've seen Up in 3D, and I did see Tron in 3D, and there's another movie that I saw in 3D. I can't quite remember which one it was.
You saw Avatar in 3D.
Actually, I didn't see Avatar in theaters.
You didn't see Avatar in 3D? Oh, you didn't? Oh, you're right, you didn't.
I didn't. What was the other movie? All right, well, I know I've seen two movies in 3Ds, and then I saw Tron. And the reason why I bring this up is that the movies that I saw did 3D very tastefully. Up did it very well. And I do not get a headache watching 3D, although Adam will tell you a different story.
I do. I cannot watch stereoscopic 3D for more than about 5 to 10 minutes without getting a headache. Now, if it's less than 5 to 10 minutes, I can do it. If it's more than that, something in my brain just says, "What the crap are you doing?"
Yeah, what I'm seeing is wrong. What?
This isn't working for me.
Yeah.
I get serious headaches when I watch 3D. So I make a special point of seeing all my movies in 2D, the way movies are meant to be seen.
Yeah. So for me, I don't have the problem. But the problem that I do have with 3D is that because you are looking through polarized lenses, the image is actually dark. It's a lot darker than, you know, what it should be. And that was actually a real bummer because I remember watching Up and I was like, man, these colors just seem, you know, dark and flat. And I'm so used to seeing these brilliant colors on the screen. And then I would like remove the glasses for like a second and then see all these brilliant colors. Of course, it's in double image, but still these brilliant colors. I'm like, oh, and I just put them back on.
And then, of course, just to be a smart ass, I told him how awesome the colors were in that movie.
Yeah. Anyway,
and then I did it again for Tron.
Yeah. But the reason why I bring it up with Tron is the first two times I've seen 3D movies, I saw it with the polarized lenses. These are the radial ones, so you can actually tilt your head, and you know the image is fine. But at the Arclight where we saw it, they had the shutter glasses, and I heard that the shutters are better. And so I went there, and the image was still dark because it's still the polarization. I mean, that's how they do the flickering. It's an LCD or an L, yeah, or something. Anyway, so yeah, I think I'm just gonna make sure to watch movies in 2D from now on. Even the shutter glasses have that problem. So anyway, now that that's out of the way,
I have won over another convert.
Yes. Well, I was already sold, but I actually went to see the movie for free with a friend, so I didn't get to choose what it was.
Well, you know, you just haven't seen the light yet. But now that you have seen...
Yeah.
You have seen the darkness.
Or the 50% darkness.
Yeah, the 50% darkness.
That's out of the way. So with our analysis of Tron, the first thing we always do is we talk about what we like first. So what did we like about Tron?
The style. I absolutely love the style. The grid. Oh.
Yeah.
The way that everything looked, the lights, the suits that they wore. Like, I remember the original Tron. You have that Tron guy that has the old
leotard.
Leotard costume. And they had the captions, "Don't worry, ma'am, the internet is here." Just because of how retarded it looks.
Yeah, it's like, "Oh, don't worry, I'm from the internet."
Yeah, "Don't worry, I'm from the internet." Well, the new suits will not have any such problem. They are awesome.
Yeah.
They are absolutely awesome. I love them. I was just like, "Oh, dude."
Yeah, well, like, yeah, the ones that the, like, the people who, or programs, whatever, but the program / people who actually fight, you know, their costumes are awesome. But even the civilians, even their costumes are awesome.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they didn't have quite as many stripes, you know, glowy stripes on them, but just the few little stripes here and there, it was just cool.
And the robes that Kevin Flynn wore.
Yeah, it was glowing on the inside. Yeah.
Glowing on the inside, and had the single stripe on it, and I was just like, dude.
Yeah.
That thing was sweet. Like, just everything about it. Something about how his was minimal and everybody else's complex just made him into such a badass.
Yeah. I really liked we could say, oh, the visuals are awesome, but no, the design, the creativity.
Yeah, it wasn't the visuals. I mean, we take computer graphics for granted these days. I know, I do this crap, I animate.
Yeah.
And I take it for granted, even though I know how much work it is and how much goes into it. Anybody or any movie that has sufficient budget to hire talented artists is gonna look, you know, realistic. What made this one good was that it had creativity to back it up.
Yeah, like there's a scene when they're inside of Kevin Flynn's house in the grid, and he has the fireplace with all these like little pixels flowing up.
Oh yeah, it looked like fire, except for it was made out of water or something like that.
It was blue pixels flowing up. It was just awesome. I was like, that is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, and I love that sidekick when he tipped over the thing on the chessboard.
Oh yeah,
and then everybody's reaction—they're all the whole thing's silent, and everybody's all looking at him.
Yeah, there are some really funny moments in the movie. Kevin Flynn's character—I mean, you know—he basically he was from the '80s when he got trapped into this computer. So he's still—I mean, just the way he talks is still so '80s.
Yeah, he's still stuck in the '80s.
Yeah,
and a lot of the stuff that was in there—it's like, "Long live the users," and then a few minutes later, "Death to the users."
Yeah.
Same character.
Yeah, then there's this one scene where Kevin Flynn gets all frustrated and he looks like he's about to snap, and he just says, "You're messing with my Zen thing, man."
Yeah, you're messing with my Zen.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a good I really liked him as a character.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, he was cool. So, like, he was funny, but he wasn't, like, the writers weren't trying to overdo it, you know?
Yeah.
It was just those golden moments.
They didn't turn him into, like, the Will Smith, what was the name of his character in Independence Day?
Well, he pretty much plays the same part in all of his...
Yeah, he plays that same character in every movie he's in.
Well, I guess not all of them. He's doing some more drama stuff, like Search for Happiness, you know?
Oh, well.
But when he does an action movie, yeah, he's the same character.
He's the same character in all those. Yeah. I personally find that character annoying, and it seems like every action or special effects movie has to have that character in there somewhere, and they don't exist in real life.
Yeah.
You don't have people. Well, they exist, but everybody thinks they're annoying. And so you ignore them. And when you put a character like that in the movie, it just, go away. I don't want you. I don't like, get out of my experience. And Tron, had humor in it, but never had a character like that.
Yeah. The humor was very, situational. It was
situational. It made sense. It fit. And then you're just like, there were genuine laughs, I felt. I thought that was really, really well written.
Yeah.
The humor was very well done. There were a few moments in there that felt a little bit cheesy, but it was never bad. It was never over the top. Mm-hmm. You can make an argument for the speech at the end from Clue.
When he's addressing his army.
When he's addressing his army of perfect drones. That was a little over the top.
Yeah. Well, I mean, him as a villain, Clue, he was kind of, you know, the stereotypical villain. The reason why he was so dang nasty evil wasn't really made clear until the very end of the movie, kind of. You know.
Yeah, and even then, they kind of pulled back a little bit. Oh, he's not evil. He's just trying to do what, you know, what he was designed to.
Yeah, to make the perfect world. So
where he was just happened to have that purpose, and he's trying to fulfill his goal. I did really like the ISOs though.
Oh my goodness! When they introduced the ISOs. By the way, the reason why Adam and I went to go see this movie in the first place is because we heard that they actually got the help of some of the writers at Pixar to, you know, help them out with the script, which makes sense because, I mean, Disney, Pixar, you know, the same. Technically, it's the same company, but, you know, different teams. But, yeah that's...
Yeah, it's like early Pixar guys before they were Pixar that did the original special effects.
Yeah, so I was waiting for the story to get, like, you know, awesome. And then when they introduced the ISOs, I was like, wow, okay.
Yeah. All right. I'm sold. The only thing that those that, and then the genocide, and I was like, okay, this is getting awesome. And then it turned out that the genocide was in the distant past. And
yeah.
I think that's where it started to lose me because there was this high, so like, okay, that's an awesome concept. These life forms just appeared out of nowhere, and then they took the form of their creator of Flynn, who was a god in this world. And, and then all of a sudden, they pull the rug out from under you, and oh, by the way, these people don't exist. And the fact that there was one left didn't really redeem it.
Mm-hmm.
I
think there might have been two left. I think Castor was one as well. I got the impression that Castor was an ISO. Because didn't he have the mark on his skin? I think the ISOs are the only ones that actually had marks on their skin.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing him. He might have, though.
Yeah, they definitely didn't make a big deal about it. Although that might have been the reason why Clue decided to kill him. Ah, spoilers. It's your own fault. the whole concept of the ISOs I just thought was awesome.
Yeah. The biggest thing, we'll get to this later, but the biggest change that I would have made is I would have had that genocide being ongoing.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, as the movie progressed,
it started to run out of steam, I thought.
Well, it was kind of running out of steam, but I was like, okay, there's a lot of really interesting stuff going on, but I didn't really feel that attached to what was going on. Like, the whole idea with the ISOs and the Genso was like, oh, this is awesome. And then, you know, as you said, when it was just something in the past, that's kind of like, okay, what's going on now? And, what was her name? The ISO?
I can't remember.
It was Korra. That's it.
You know what I thought was really, really interesting was that the villains in both movies had a computer-generated face.
Yep.
See, Clue in this film was his face was computer generated so that the actor, you know, showed the young version of himself. What was this actor's name?
Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges. Basically, they wanted to have the young Jeff Bridges' face on him, so they made it computer generated. And in the original movie, for those who haven't seen it, the they had this really badly done, well, early 80s computer graphics that is probably state of the art in the day, but by today's standards, badly done head that was almost like a sphere with a few.
It was a cylinder with a face on it.
Yeah, cylinder with a face on it, and the eyes, and there was no shading on it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a hole where the eyes were supposed to be, and then little discs so that he could look around, and then the mouth. It was just awful, but. You know, a computer-generated face for the villain in both movies.
Yep. Now, one thing that was interesting is I actually didn't know that the face for the young Kevin Flynn and Clue was CG. I didn't know that going into it. I knew that they had the same actor, and I was like, oh. Because I looked at the face, I'm like, there's something not quite right about the face. Maybe it's the makeup. But
I thought it was the makeup. Something felt wrong to me about the face, but I figured it was the makeup that they were using. And I remember my brother was saying something about how, you know, they did a really good job with his face. And I was thinking about it. I was like, yeah, well, they did a good job.
It was good. I mean, it fooled me.
It did. I thought it was an actual face. I even though something felt wrong about it, but I you know, makeup department is not immune for problems.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the character, the physical properties of the makeup.
Yeah.
You know, it was like some part of the face just didn't look elastic enough while he was talking. And I mean, it's just really, 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 really subtle, you know, you know, it's something that only people like us would probably like notice kind of a thing. But yeah,
well, I would notice because I'm into the whole animation thing that includes realistic animation.
Yeah.
Study a ton about how the face moves.
Yeah, but...
But even so, I couldn't quite put my finger on it while I was actually watching the film. It was just when I found out that his face wasn't real, I was like, okay.
Yeah, but kudos, though, to the team that did it, because it was really good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even so, I was pretty impressed with that. They did a good job.
Yeah, I was really impressed. So, and while we're talking about good stuff, the vehicles were awesome.
Oh yeah, I love the vehicles.
Yeah, what was that scouting thing? The upside down U shape.
Oh, whatever. I don't know. I'm not that big of a Tron geek. I just seen the movies. That thing, I thought it was awesome that they gave its design a logical coherency to it.
Yeah.
All they really did was they defined what all the parts are by adding more details. But my goodness, did that make a difference.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it doesn't just float. It actually has, like, rockets on those two, on the, you know, the outside portions of the craft, and the top part would, like, lower down. And
yeah, so when it lands, top part lowers down to the bottom, so it keeps you away from the business end of the rocket boosters. And I was like, okay, now it has a design that somewhat makes sense.
Yeah, and it was awesome.
And it was awesome. I mean, like, it just worked out, you know?
Yeah. The light bikes were awesome, too. Of course.
I love the light bikes.
I want one.
Like, the whole gravity scene where the gravity just kept getting switched up. And they had the light bikes that were underneath, and then they flipped over to the top.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole sequence was just locked. There's only one major issue that I have with Tron as a series overall is that even with the new movie, it was never 100% clear whether or not the programs had free will or what they actually are, because it implied that these were programs that perform, you know, the tasks that your computer does, like an accounting program. In fact, in the first movie, there was a program that said it actually was an accounting program. Okay, so you have this fantasy world where programs are sentient. Okay, you know, whatever. suspension of disbelief. You're working in the realm of an alternate world anyway. But if you're going to do that, when you're going to create a fantasy world, even if the fantasy world is loosely based on the real thing, I think you need a little bit more clarity. Do the programs have free will? Because that's important information for the audience. If they don't, then why should I give a crap? You know, because if they don't have free will, it means they're probably not actually sentient. Why would I give a crap if one dies?
Yeah.
If they do have a free will, if they are sentient beings, if they, you know, so like they, writing a program is almost like creating new life in that case, then it makes more sense that this would be something that you could, you know, you could care about. Then there's also the obvious issue is, oh, he's dead. Do we have a backup?
Yeah.
But again, it's a fantasy world. So let's just assume that's not possible in this world. So in the new movie with Clue, it kind of implied that they do have free will, but then it simultaneously implied that he didn't.
Yeah, because...
because he turned against his master, but then at the same time, he's still going off on, wasn't I still supposed to create the perfect world? And he's still obsessed with creating the perfect world. And I'm thinking, does he have free will or doesn't he? Because it almost, you know, it's like, on one hand, it would take an act of free will to go against his master, but then on the other, he's obsessed with doing what his original purpose was. So...
yeah. And then there's also the all the other programs that were repurposed and turned into slaves for his program army, his botnet, as it were.
Botnet, that's a good name for it. Yeah, and then Tron at the end that had his deathbed repentance. His miraculous conversion, let's call it that.
Yeah, he was about to kill Kevin Flynn and...
It was the two Flynns and then the ISO.
Yeah.
And then
he just turned and shot at Clue instead, kind of a thing. You know, it was like, okay, that was a little convenient and not really well explained. Because it's like, okay, so you repurpose these programs, but apparently they can still churn on you. And this, and on the thing as far as the reprogramming, Kevin Flynn, who is like, you know, the creator, he can just walk up behind someone and push some buttons on the back and then, you know, reprogram one of the guards. That was the scene where that happened. And then I guess if it's not working, you can hit him on the head and then it starts working.
However that's supposed to work.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking, if he can do that, dude, he could totally take over this whole army, because for Clue to do it, he has to put him in some reprogramming chamber. But Kevin Flynn can do it by pushing a few buttons. He can take over that army way faster than Clue could reclaim him.
Mm-hmm.
So what on earth is he wasting his time for? And then, of course, there's the "you sure should have done that sooner" Deus Ex Machina. All of a sudden, I can create this big explosion that apparently I could have done all along.
Yeah,
that's another issue altogether, though.
Yeah, it's towards the end. I kind of got the feeling that they were trying to do a lot of setup for a sequel, like with Tron. You know, changing colors when he gets dumped into the Sea of Simulation, and you know, some of the open ends that are at the end, like, you know, what actually did happen to Kevin Flynn, you know?
Yeah, it didn't look like he was dead.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it seems like they do want to leave it open for sequels, so they can do like what they're doing with, Pirates of the Caribbean, which for Tron, I actually wouldn't mind. I would like to see a sequel to Tron. I really would.
Yeah, I'd like to go back to that world, if nothing else. I mean, you know, I was just really disappointed that they didn't use the ISOs to their full potential, because that was a cool concept, and it totally worked in the world of Tron.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and one thing, you know, as far as the whole for me when I was watching, I was like, why isn't this movie like pulling on my heartstrings kind of a thing? Part of it was how they decided to resolve the conflict, which was basically to run away, was just to exit and then pull the plug.
Yeah, there was no resolution. They were just leaving it all behind. And then, you know, everybody in this world is going to be dead. Why would anybody help this guy? I mean, come on. You know, if you escape, you're going to pull the plug and I'm going to cease to exist. I think I'll help you get to the portal.
Yeah.
Honestly. Well, and that could be in the realm of plot hole, but as far as the point of tugging on the heartstrings, I think that really you needed to have some stronger motivator for the audience, not necessarily the characters for the audience. I mean, if characters endanger their lives and running, whatever, the character certainly has motivation. But what about the audience? Does the audience have a motivation to want the character to succeed? Mm-hmm. And in this case, where their success is measured simply by getting out of the grid and returning to their construct, their business, where they're billionaires.
Yeah.
Yeah, how selfless of you.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to take control of the company now.
And he did just that.
Yep. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah.
Which, you know, from the beginning, it's another rich kid, you know, as inherits a company, doesn't want to take responsibility, and, you know, kind of goes into that role. I'm sure there's a lot of other movies that are like that. Was the new Green Hornet has that.
Yeah.
It's a very common trope.
Although I do kind of wish that people who have a lot of money would, you know, use it for awesome, or at least for good, you know.
Yeah, it'll settle for good. The other issue was you have Kevin Flynn, and he's like only a few minutes drive away from the city, and you can clearly see that because it only takes it long for the vehicle to get there. He can see the city out his window.
You're talking about the grid. Well,
the grid, but I'm talking about the city where Clue is.
Yeah.
Kevin Flynn's residence versus where Clue is. Mm-hmm. He can see it from there, okay? And he's been there for 20 years and never been found. Has Clue never heard of a sweep search? I mean, come on, he's right there. How long would it take him to use his resources? And he seemed to have a pretty significant amount of resources. Look at the ending where he has the army lined up. He couldn't recruit those guys to go and search the area and find Kevin Flynn. Come on.
Yeah. And I suppose the writers might have thought, well, they couldn't go into the Badlands, but they had these flying crafts, and they could have just scouted with that, you know.
They totally could. You know, a few weeks would be enough to find him, but 20 years...
Yeah,
he could have found him dozens of times over, and then in the end, we traced it back. We found them now. And then they show up there. It's like, seriously, he was that close, and you imply that you are looking.
Yeah,
I call bullshit.
Yeah, they traced the motor, the old style light bike. Yeah, yeah. I was like, okay.
Okay, you can trace that, but you couldn't trace the four-wheeler. I'm missing something. It seems easier to trace one going out than to trace one coming back. But let's say that they leave a trail. If you could trace one, you could trace the other. But anyway.
Yeah.
But it's like I said earlier, I mean, I'm kind of a geek, and I write stories. I notice these plot holes. I don't think that, and it didn't really take away from my enjoyment of the movie. I did thoroughly enjoy it, and other audiences did too. Most people probably won't even notice all these things. Mm-hmm. So, now as for me in my stories, I want to have none of these if I can help it. I don't know if it's possible to have zero, but if it is possible, I want to achieve it.
Yeah, we could try. I mean.
But,
Yeah, it was kind of like,
give me zero plot holes or give me death.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of, I think it was actually a few days ago. I sent you a message about something that I realized while I was taking a shower. I was thinking about, because I was watching like the history of Pixar and how they brought 2D animation back and they had Princess and the Frog. And I was just thinking about the magic system and that, and how simple it was, which was, okay, you have this curse. If you kiss a princess, then you can become human again. But if you, apparently, if you don't kiss a princess, the person you kiss also becomes a frog.
You kiss a non-princess.
A non-princess.
What would happen if you kissed a prince?
That would, wow. Yeah, they didn't really go into that in a Disney movie. But, yeah, no, so, I mean, that's how, Tanya became a frog. At the end of the movie, when he kissed Charlotte, why didn't she become a frog? She wasn't a princess anymore because the spell didn't work. So, yeah, plot hole. although to be fair, I was thinking, it was like a year later and I just barely realized that, you know,
don't ruin my childhood
or I guess our adulthood.
Adulthood.
Yeah.
Hey, I was a child at heart when I watched that movie and you ruined my child at hearthood by pointing out that problem.
Yeah. Although but at the same time, I can't think how the story would have worked out if, there was now three frogs. I mean, how would have that resolved? You know, but the way they did resolve it, and
that actually would have been pretty amusing. But if the two kissed and it broke the spell for all three,
yeah. So, but anyway, but
I said it when I saw that movie at first, and I still think this, that ending where she marries him, then she becomes a princess, and then it breaks the spell. I thought that was clever.
Yeah, that was really good.
I liked that. So,
yeah, and that was so good that pretty much everything else, well, I guess I just didn't even realize it, but even now that I know about that one plot hole, I can still overlook that, because the ending was just so well thought out.
And you know what? That's another one of those plot holes that, you know, you got to give a little. You have, I remember seeing a interview with someone on Monsters, Inc., and they said that if they had the lights flicker every time she giggled, then it would be so distracting.
Yeah,
and so they thought of it. They addressed the issue, and they said, "No, we just can't do it. We'll do it at key moments where we need to emphasize the issue, but then not do it the rest of the movie because it's just going to take away. It's not going to have anything."
Yeah,
and I think that this whole thing with Charlotte, this is probably one of those issues. You know, you really it would be a little too much to have. You'd have another conflict to resolve if they turned her into a frog. But at the same time, you know, it would be in character for her to do that for them.
Yeah. So I guess the takeaway from what could have been done, like if we were the writers for this movie, and, you know, what would we have done differently?
We would have gone further with the ISOs. I love that concept.
Yeah. Yeah, Adam, I think you said make the genocide an ongoing thing. So it's not like,
so the genocide's still happening.
Yeah, and which would be nice because then there would have been less exposition.
And I think that the genocide could, I mean, who knows what their lifespan is, because the computer system's not that old. So obviously they're not, you know, they don't have lifespan like we do. If they're a living thing, then I'm assuming they're capable of reproduction, which means that they are likely to, the genocide could go on for a very long time with a population that can replenish itself. And so that could, they could have, in 20 years, you could have hundreds of generations. And many of them may not even know who the creator is or have given up hope or think he's a myth.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have really played with that idea, because if they're technically immortal and that they don't have a natural life or aging process, but they do reproduce because they're a living thing. You could potentially have hundreds of them go by, and then you could still have the one from the original generation that was there this whole time watching this, you know, hoping that things would get better.
Yeah.
And that could be a very complex character. So I would have really expanded that concept. I think that would have been, you know, really an amazing direction for that story.
Yeah. I don't know why, but when the ISOs first popped up, I was thinking about John Conway's Game of Life for some reason.
What? It's weird. I thought of that too. I guess we're both nerds.
Yeah.
Wah. Maybe I should get my little glasses with the tape in the middle.
Hey, don't diss my glasses, man.
Do you have tape in the middle of your glasses?
No.
What are you waiting for?
I'll get some tape.
Go get you some masking tape.
Yeah, I got some tape right here.
Make sure it's brightly colored.
The thing I don't like about this tape is you can never find...
60s orange, man. 60s orange, like right there in the middle of your glasses.
Do they make 60 orange color tape?
Electrical tape, they do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they have electrical tape and all the colors in the rainbow. And then some.
I want to see electrical tape that is outside of the color spectrum.
Infrared?
Infrared.
Ultraviolet?
Dude, we should totally get a patent on infrared tape.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever played a Paranoia. It's kind of like a role-playing game where you have color-coded items, which is like security clearance, and they do have ultraviolet and infrared-colored items.
Word.
Yep. Fun game, by the way. If you guys ever get a chance to play it, it's awesome. Screw your friends. Great idea for a game. Amuse the DM. Get perversion points. Also a very good idea for a game. Oh, Paranoia is so awesome. All right, so that about wraps it up. I think... have a happy Christmas Eve. And enjoy Christmas tomorrow. I guess we'll see you all next week. At some point, I need to watch Tangled. Adam has seen it, but I haven't.
The silhouette through the vines was the best scene.
Whatever that means. I don't know.
Glenn is about to find out about the silhouette through the vines.
Yeah.
It's only 5 seconds long. And that was... I laughed. I laughed my ass off.
Sweet. Okay, so again, I'm Glenn Moyes.
I'm Adam Weber.
And we are signing off until next week. See ya.
See ya.